From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's March the 5th, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Federal Reserve's lead agricultural economist says the recession is taking root in rural America. On that same financial front, an ethanol industry trade group speculates increasing the blend rate from 10 to 15% could cause a $24 billion with a B windfall. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear that conversation I had about crop insurance earlier in the week with University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnittke. And of course, at the end of the program, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat at $5.04, down 7.75. May at $5.15, 8 cents lower. And July wheat, $5.27, down 8. March corn futures today, $3.49.25, 6 cents lower. May down a nickel at $3.58.5. And July corn at $3.67.75, down 5. September, $3.76.25, 5.5 cents lower. And December, the harvest month for new crop, down 6 cents today at $3.87.75. Soybeans finished the March contract at $8.62.5, 13 lower. The May down 16.5, $8.52 the settlement price. July beans, $8.51.25, 16.5 cents lower. And the August soybean futures, $8.37.5, down 14.5. September contract, $8.12, 12.25 lower. November beans, $7.99.25, or rather $7.99.5. Down 10.75 for the November beans. March bean meal at $2.68.80, down $5.40. The May at $2.61.30, $6 lower on the afternoon. March bean oil, 30 cents lower at $30.44. The May at $30.71, down 28. April live cattle, $83.90, 75 cents lower, down 70. In the June contract at $82.35. March feeder cattle at $92.20, down 82.5. And the April, $1.02.5 lower at $92.82.5. April lean hog, $64.42.5, 10 cents higher on the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby April crude oil futures are trading at $43.61 a barrel when they finish today, $1.77 lower. May at $45.66, the settlement price there, down $1.54. April ethanol finished at $1.51, 2.2 cents lower. The natural gas at $4.07, that is, 27 lower for the day since. And the April RBOB gasoline at $1.31.2, 6.8 cents lower. April heating oil futures, $1.16.4, down 5 cents on the afternoon. And the propane futures at $62.3, up 6 tenths of a cent. Gold futures are trading at $927 at this hour, $21 higher. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 66.19 is currently trading 257 points lower on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own Mike Soley. He says a wind advisory is in effect for much of central Illinois. That until 6 p.m. Central Time tonight. Tonight, Mike says, in northern Illinois and Indiana, it should be partly to mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy. Lows will range from 38 in northwestern Illinois to 55 in the southern part of the state of Illinois. Friday, considerable cloudiness with scattered showers, patchy drizzle. Highs tomorrow will range from 55 in northern Illinois to 70 in the southwestern part of the state. The extended forecast says scattered showers and thunderstorms will become more numerous Friday evening in western Illinois, exiting eastern Indiana by Sunday midday. The heaviest precip will focus on far northern Illinois, where some 2-inch-plus rain amounts are possible during the day on Saturday. We'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast as this program closes out in just about 24 minutes.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. And Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joins us by phone this afternoon. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Kind of an ugly day on Wall Street today, and it had an impact, I think, in Chicago, too.
Sure. Everybody's watching the stock market. They're watching for any kind of signs that the economy would begin to slow the deterioration that we have seen. But until there's some kind of hope out there that the economy has found bottom and begin to recover, you're just going to continue to see ongoing sell pressures in the stock indexes, and then that's going to spill on over into the ag commodities.
Two things of note for the day, I believe. One is that the Federal Reserve's chief ag economist, I don't know whether we call him chief, but the head one, top dog there, said it's finally taking root in the rural America, at least that the recession is. And secondly, General Motors, in some of their paperwork, looks like they're not going to fare very well over the next month or so and suggest they may have to go bankrupt.
Well, I don't see how they can avoid it. I saw on the paper here last week when I was in Texas that Nissan is getting ready to bring in a brand new economy car for $10,000 out of Mexico, and I don't know how General Motors or Chrysler or Ford is going to be able to compete with a $10,000 Nissan. It looks to me like they're done. It's just a matter of accepting the fact.
Okay, well, let's accept that fact, and we'll let the government worry about it just a bit. I suppose producers are going to worry about what they need to do with their crop in the coming year and what they've got left in the bin. Any ideas?
Until there's some indication that the economy is going to stop deteriorating, that's going to continue to spill over into the grains. I mean, it's going to be a slow bleed. You've got the Dow down here now to 6,600. Unless Washington decides to develop policies that are beneficial toward capitalistic form of government and find a stimulus package that creates jobs, I see that the stock market is going to continue to deteriorate. I mean, there's nothing that's being done in Washington to rebound this recovery. Everything is increased taxes and taxes and taxes. It kind of has a war on wealth feel to it, and I think that continues to put pressure on the stock market, and then that weighs over into commodities. Now, at some point in time here in the ag commodities, the market will begin to focus on growing season weather. And I think it's starting to come into focus because we do have awfully dry conditions in Texas, and that creeps on up into Oklahoma and into Kansas. As you know, I was in Texas last week, and they are planting corn in Waco. It all ought to be up by now. The seeds were all germinated, but they're going to need some rain to have anything. I do know that, but I do think the dry weather in the southern plains could begin to kind of catch as a supportive influence maybe to the wheat market. And if you could get a supportive influence going in the wheat market, then that may come over and kind of help us over on the corn and soybean front.
Well, what would you consider support in the wheat market in terms of price? I understand the drought conditions.
Well, we are in a supply-driven market, so demand is not going to turn it. You're going to have something come into play, and that would be like a drought market where you would have to see major concern that the overall yield in wheat is going to be would fall sharply, and overall U.S. supplies are going to fall sharply. And it's just a little early probably to begin to call for that. But unless we do get some rains in the southern plains, it's going to be real difficult to, shorten up the crop. But I think that's the first thing that's got to happen. Somebody's going to come out with a private estimate, or the government's going to come out with a private estimate, and we're going to see a big fall off in production prospects. And then that would trigger, I think, a bottom in the wheat market. And then that would spill over and probably stop the bleeding that we're seeing here in corn and soybean prices.
I don't like to become a speculator, but let's do it anyway in the wheat market, because the majority of the wheat is grown in the northern hemisphere, certainly not in the United States, but in other places. Ukraine has had great political difficulties recently. Will that have an impact on the wheat market at any point? Might they just simply abandon acres that have been put in the ground there?
Correct. Anything, whether it's here or abroad, I mean, if you have anything that's going to shorten up world wheat supplies in any kind of meaningful way is what's going to trigger the market. So, it may take a combination of smaller wheat crops throughout the world, but you're going to have to shorten up the crop in order to ratchet up the prices. Other than that, there's just not enough demand around to kind of put a bottom in the market. So you're going to have to cut supply, and then you kind of hope that demand holds steady, and then that would, propel a bottom in the wheat complex.
And it's kind of unusual for you to be back in the office. You've been traveling a lot lately. Are you scheduled to be out anywhere soon?
I'm pretty much in the office. I do have several local-type meetings, but they're basically in evenings or just day-type meetings. So I do have a few of those left here until everybody starts getting busy in the field. But other than that, I'm here for a while, which I'm ready to be here for a while. I have done a lot of traveling over the last 3 months, and I'm ready for a break.
Well, you get a break at least until Tuesday when you come to the beef house.
I'm looking forward to that. Our chief economist, Perry Dixon, is going to be over there. He spends a lot of time in South America, and he's about got as good a handle on South America as you're ever going to find. And he does look at overall world trends, consumption patterns of countries, and where the things are going to expand and contract. So I think the audience will get a lot of good information from him as far as how a commercial grain company looks at world demand and where the expansion is. I think he'll give a good outlook on that side. I think you guys got me on soybeans again, so I'll have some kind of opinion on soybeans, right or wrong, and that be willing to share with the crowd.
All right. Thanks much.
Very well.
We'll talk with you again next week and Tuesday, too. That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Dave Dick is here now with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, an expert at the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City says a deepening U.S. recession is taking root in rural America, spilling across a sector that has largely lagged the suffering seen on Wall Street. Jason Henderson, the Federal Reserve's lead agricultural economist, says, quote, "The recession has now caught up with rural America. While rural lenders are largely faring better than their commercial counterparts in metropolitan areas, they are experiencing increased delinquency rates and increased charge-offs as customers are unable to pay back debt. For the third quarter of 2008, small community banks reported an average return on assets of 0.3%, down from 0.7% a year earlier. Henderson says that the weakness seen in early 2009 will likely persist through the end of the year and possibly longer, with a rebound in the rural economy largely dependent on a return of strong global demand for food products and manufactured goods. Newly minted ethanol trade group Growth Energy says the reeling U.S. ethanol industry could create 136,000 jobs and inject $24 billion into the economy annually if the government hikes the allowable blend of ethanol with gasoline from 10 to 15%. A hike to 15% ethanol blend would require the U.S. to build another 6 billion gallons of capacity. Current industry capacity is 10.3 billion gallons per year, with another 1.9 billion gallons currently idled. The World Trade Organization Director General Pascal Lamy is urging the U.S. not to backpedal on trade liberalization and wants the new administration to accept the progress made last December in the Doha talks. The WTO failed to clinch a new global commerce pact in December because of a dust-up between the former administration of President George Bush and emerging economies over agricultural and industrial goods. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. He'll be co-hosting with me the All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Things get started at 7:15 a.m. Central Time, 8:15 if you're in the Eastern Time Zone in Covington. At the Beef House for our All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting, the cost is $16, but that includes the meal for the day. Should be a great event. You can read all about it on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, we'll hear from one of the speakers that'll be there on Tuesday of next week at the Beef House. I had the opportunity to discuss crop insurance with farm management specialist Gary Schnittke earlier in the week. Let's start out, Gary, with this question. What were the final figures from USDA for the federal crop insurance programs, corn and soybean?
Corn and soybean prices, base prices for 2009 are $4.04 for corn and $8.80 for soybeans.
And what does that mean?
Actually, that is used to set our revenue guarantees on the revenue products, all revenue products, CRC, RA, and GRIP. This year, those prices are considerably below last year, so to get the same dollar coverage level, coverage levels will have to rise this year from last year to have the same dollar coverage per acre.
So instead of 65, they'd need to go to 70 or 75 or 80 or 85 right, or whatever percent coverage they would like in order to get the same dollar coverage they had last year. The good news is that we've known for quite some time that it was probably going to be cheaper to do that.
Yeah, and it is going to be, the premiums are going to be less expensive. One reason why is because the base prices are lower, and that influences premiums. The other thing that's happening this year that's pretty significant is that they're increasing the subsidy levels on enterprise units, which applies to CRC and RA. And an enterprise unit is all of one crop in a county. And that means that if a person decides to insure all of one crop in a county, not divide up their farms so that they could get insurance payments on each farm, but all one crop in one county, they increase those subsidy levels substantially, and that will result in $8 to $9 less premiums this year than last year.
And I think that the good news there is that you're likely to tell folks that they need to take one of those particular policies as opposed to the GRIP policies this year. Is that right?
Well, no, GRIP is still a good policy. I think the choice comes down between GRIP and CRC and RA, and particularly at the enterprise level. And GRIP is going to tend to pay out more than it pays in over time, and there's nothing that's changed that. But CRC and RA provide better risk protection because it's based on an own farm's yield. I would suggest that farmers who haven't in the past look at CRC at an enterprise level, and what they'll find is that their premiums will be for a 75% coverage level, something in the $8 to $9 an acre range, which will be considerably less than last year, and maybe increase the coverage level. So that one of the big things I guess we're concerned about this year is lower prices, and that will provide more protection if you increase the coverage level. But this year might not be a bad year to keep with that GRIP program. We're starting the year with a 880 soybean price, but we're already seeing futures contracts a dollar below that. So there's a considerable chance of low prices and pretty high yield, high payments on GRIP products when they're purchased at a 90% coverage level.
Are there a couple of key issues that producers can look at in order to help them make the decision as to whether they're doing CRC or GRIP, and what might they be?
The big thing is people with CRC will likely feel they need that individual coverage because they're more of a financially vulnerable situation. The other thing that pushes people to CRC is if they have land that doesn't match the county. And I'll just give you an example here. Let's say you have 1,000 acres, but it's spread in six sections over the whole county. You're going to match the county yield pretty closely. You might not match the county yield if all of it's in one or two sections located next to another. And if those sections are in poorer land, then you're not in as good a position to use GRIP as CRC.
Ag economists across the Midwest, I see, have been suggesting that the new acre program rather than the traditional farm programs might be a good way for producers to start out this year. Of course, once they've signed up, they've got to be in. Are there crop insurance decisions that they need to make that go along with the acre program? Should they decide that they're going to put a unit or all their units into the acre program?
I don't see as much if linkage between what the crop insurance decision and whether you stick in the traditional or acre program, because either one of those programs aren't going to provide that good of risk protection for an individual farm. If you're going to be an acre, the one thing that you have to consider is that there's a farm trigger in it that must be met before you can receive acre payments, and the farm trigger increases the higher your farm level premium or what you pay for crop insurance. So if you're going to be an acre, chances of getting a payment are probably larger if you have a higher crop insurance premium.
So that may be one thing they need to consider if they go into the acre program. Two things, I guess. They probably need to take crop insurance to protect themselves, but to protect themselves, and they need to take it at a higher coverage level.
Yeah, and again, if you're in acre, you're not going to be providing yourself protection for yield shortfalls on your own farm, so you still need crop insurance. And yet, the higher your crop insurance premium, the more likely you are to meet that farm level trigger. And just to give you a feel for that, we did a little analysis with FPFM yields, and across the state, if they didn't have any insurance payment, they met the trigger 85% of the time.
That's Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois. I had that discussion with him a bit earlier in the week. You can hear it on our website if you'd like at willag.org. You'll need to listen to the whole program for the Closing Market Report. Of course, you can come see him in person next Tuesday over at the Beef House for our all-day agricultural outlook meeting. And if you can't make that, we'll post it into our weekend newsletter. Sign up at willag.org. And I'll run it again on Tuesday of next week right here on this program. 2 minutes, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Cheese Doodle Day. The cheese-flavored snack debuted sometime in the 1950s. They were invented at the old London Melba Toast factory in the Bronx when workers discovered a machine that extruded cornmeal in a long air-filled string. They chopped the string into bite-sized pieces and coated it with cheese. By the way, the product has always been baked not fried. On this day in agricultural history in 1558, Francisco Hernandez supposedly introduced tobacco to Europe. At first, it was grown only as an ornamental plant. It was not until the 1580s that tobacco smoking caught on in Europe with the return of some Virginia colonists. They created a stir by smoking tobacco from pipes. In 1836, on this day, Charles Goodnight was born. He is said to have devised the first chuck wagon from an army wagon in the 1850s or 1860s, with various shelves and compartments for food, equipment, utensils, and medical supplies. In 1893, Emmett J. Culligan was born. He was the founder of the water treatment company that carries his name. And in 1991, on this day, the nation's 5,000,000th patent was issued to Lonnie O. Ingram of the University of Florida. The patent was for a genetically engineered form of the E. coli bacterium that converts plant material into ethanol. It took Ingram and his team 2 years of work and $150,000 to convert almost any biomass into fuel. And that's this day in agricultural history. Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. The 2009 All-Day Agriculture Outlook meeting may be our best ever. Featured analysts include Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises, ADM Chief Economist Perry Dixon, Westchester CEO Murray Wise, Bob Bastifer of First Midwest Bank, University of Illinois Agricultural Economist Gary Schnicke, and WILL Meteorologist Ed Kieser. That's March 10th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org. Thanks to these agribusinesses for helping to support this year's meeting: the Andersons, AgriGold Hybrids, ADM Investment Services, and L&M Commodities.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. We always check the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Pete Levitt. He's on the line with us again this afternoon. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It has just really nice here. It's warm outside. I see by the temperature gauge it's 64 outside, and, well, it's a little warm in here at 74 inside.
I know. The thermostats can't catch up when spring starts to hint at arriving here. Those temperatures in the 60s, 70s in southern Iowa and northern Missouri, and even in the 80s in eastern Kansas, that's quite a change from the weather we've been seeing. Along with the mild temperatures, the winds out there are rather brisk, 25 to 30 miles an hour and some gusty winds. So that's the way the warm air comes in at this time of year. We can look for temperatures to stay above normal for the next 3 or 4 days, running as much as 20 degrees above normal in the Champaign area tomorrow and again on Saturday. Unfortunately, we're going to have to pay for this warm weather in some form or other, and it looks like it's going to be a wet period coming up now, beginning late tomorrow, mostly on Saturday, and then continuing Sunday and into early Monday. And this will be across the northern half of the state. That some very heavy rains, I think, will occur in a band from the I-80 region, just about the axis of the band from west to east, with 2 to 4 inches of rain in that Saturday, Sunday into early Monday period. So that's not going to be very pleasant, and it's going to certainly put a damper on the weekend. Temperatures will stay up during this period, and the southern half of the state looks like they're going to miss most of it. So they'll see the warm side of the pattern, and they'll enjoy warm weather over the weekend. Then we start to turn cooler next week. Another front comes through around Tuesday, more showers Tuesday. But the good news there is that the showers will be brief and will turn cooler into the latter part of the week. But no cold weather, really cold weather in sight for the next 7 days.
And very few seconds on the Great Plains states and how they're faring.
Oh, that's the problem area. We've talked about it. It's the Southern Plains. Drought is occurring in south-central Texas. It's creeping northwestward up into Oklahoma and western Kansas and eastern Colorado. It's only going to get worse over the next week or two. We don't see any pattern that looks like it's going to sustain any wet period enough to start to relieve that drought. So that's where the problem has been developing, and we're keeping an eye on.
Thanks much, Pete.
My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.